Vardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like. I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
My name is Aram, and my pronouns are he, him. I'm the producer of the Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
And my name is Dylan. My pronouns are he, they, and I'm a physicist from Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. This week on Kill Every Monster, we are featuring...
Giants.
The Monster Manual describes giants as towering figures who in lost days were dragon slayers, dreamers, crafters, and kings, but their kind fell from glory long ago.
We are joined by Tracy Barnett. Tracy is an award-winning non-binary games designer, podcast and games editor, and project manager from Columbus. They have been making games for almost 10 years. They specialize in games prompted by feelings and deep with story. You can find them online anywhere at The Other Tracy. Welcome to the show, Tracy.
Thank you both very much for having me. I'm extremely excited about this.
I've been looking forward to this one for a while, actually. I like giants.
And I think they're just dudes.
So that's the thing, is that as presented in the Monster Manual, they are just big dudes. And boy, does that do them a disservice.
Honestly, no one has given me that clean a lead-in that quickly. So, I mean, we just go into first question from that one. In that case, Tracy, what are giants?
In D&D, basically that sentence that you read, two sentences from the Monster Manual is like, it's just about all that you get. And then beyond that, giants are like this thing that can exist in the monstrous, quote unquote, non-civilized spaces in the world that are eventually, once you like get up the chain of command of giants, are relatable on a mortal to mortal level with, you know, the people who are adventuring day to day, but are just bigger. Right. Like they're understandable, but they're large. And it makes sense that the first giants in D&D that you encounter are the brutish, like ogres, right, are considered giants. They're giant kin. lots of shit is giant kin. It's like Volothamb Gedarm just got lazy and was like, oh, is it bigger than 10 feet tall? That must be related to a giant. Trolls are giants. Haha. The first ever published module of D&D, of Dungeons and Dragons, the first adventure is called Against the Giants. Because that's what you're starting off with. You're not starting off with dragons, you know, because you have, you know, 2 hit points and a steel sword. You're going against these things that are you, but larger and therefore presented as monstrous. Outside of D&D, giants are in nearly every mythological culture, because it turns out that when you look back on the days of how things were, you can very easily imagine very large, used to be humans or semi-related to humans or human-adjacent things that are just bigger and stronger, and that's not how we are anymore, right? It's an othering of power, I guess. They're everywhere. Like every culture thinks about what would it be like to be big human.
Everyone's seen some geographical feature where they've wondered, did something very large place that here?
Exactly.
It's the two options, is you see something that you can't imagine a mortal man pulling off, and you go, wow, they must have been incredibly advanced and capable of incredible things. Or, wow, you gotta be real big to move that.
Exactly. And then, like, just in my personal life, I'm a tall person. Aram's met me in person. Aram has physically hugged me.
I can confirm your height.
I tower over Aram. I'm not even like as tall as people get.
Right.
I'm at the functional limit of height in American society. I'm 6'5". And still, when I look at myself in pictures, because I feel normal, right? Whatever normal is supposed to mean. But like when I look at pictures, I'm like, holy fuck, that's a tall person. Wait, that's me, right? It's a very marked contrast, because height is a visually distinct signifier, and it allows you access to things that people who don't have it don't get. Like, I was hiking with my wife the other day, and we were not lost, but we're trying to find the right trail. And I said, well, there's like a driveway thing over there. Why don't we just go to that? And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about, because there was grass in her way from a distance that she, and I'm like, just looking over. I was like, no, it's right over there.
You can be found in stores.
Stores, conventions.
I've had the reverse of that. We were at Gen Con a couple of years back, before the pandemic. I was hanging out with Grant Howlett and Chris Taylor, who are lovely people and whose games are fantastic. And if you're listening to this, go play one of their games instead of Dungeons and Dragons. I was trying to find them, and all I had to do was look at the vast crowd of tens of thousands and just find the head above the rest of them. And we're like, ah, there's one.
It's super useful sometimes. But there is, and what I've experienced in my life is like minor, but there's a little bit of othering that comes when you get past a certain height, when you don't fit in all vehicles easily, right? You know, there are things that are just not designed for you.
Even just being a bigger person. There are movie theaters. I am 5'10", 160. Been this way my whole life, right? I am a slender dude. And there are like airplane seats or movie theater seats where when I sit in them, I'm like, this is kind of snug. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you do this being any bigger than I am.
Yeah. And I'm not like a big person. I'm not really wide. I was slender all my life. And I did that high metabolism thing of just continuing to eat like I have a high metabolism.
I'm falling into that trap too.
I'm bigger now than I ever have been, but like I'm still not a big person, but I'm 6'5", 250. Like I'm the stat line of an NFL football player without the muscle. To put this back on giants, like I get what it's like to be big, at least to a degree. There's obviously stuff that when you're, you know, 10, 12, 26 feet tall, I'll never experience. But like, you're in a world that's not designed for you anymore.
It's literally like a dollhouse at that point.
Exactly. Like if you're talking about the biggest of giants as described in D&D, yeah, literally the stuff that humans make is tinker toys.
I've got the little silhouette image from the Monster Manual in front of me, and storm giants are 26 feet tall. That is a little over four dads.
Yeah. Yeah, that is four dads tall. Yeah, that's taller than, it's just about four of me stacked on top of each other. Two of me stacked up is a story, right? Yeah. If you're talking about
like, that is like you're on the third floor of a building and you can see nose up in the window.
Yeah, exactly. They're very large and also simultaneously not that big. Like when you compare them to some of the other big monsters in D&D and like they're, you know, ancient enemies of yore, the dragons. Dragons are way bigger than that. And we're not talking like Godzilla versus King Kong. Like King Kong looks a little bit on the small side compared to the big lizard. We're talking giants are half of King Kong's size and they're fighting things Godzilla's size. They're part of this ancient fallen culture, but they're kind of still around and you can just run into them as an encounter. And then they've got this in D&D, this whole caste system that divides them into ranks.
One of the first things you read is a bunch of paragraphs that are straight up just, these are guys, they're tall. There's no information that differentiates them from people. And then it immediately follows that with, also, they have a caste system and they're real shitty about it.
The only adventure in modern D&D that features them is Storm King's Thunder. And the whole arc of the adventure is that their god, who abandoned them millennia ago, is pissed off that they haven't risen beyond where they haven't brought back the glory that they used to have. And so he destroys the Ording, meaning that any giant can just succeed on, I guess, their merits as a person or the strength of their arm, or it could be chaos. Oh no, a storm giant could be outclassed by a fire giant. We can't have that. And the end of the adventure, not to give too many spoilers, but there's no definite decision as to whether or not that gets reestablished, which further inshittifies the entire thing, because it's not like you're given a clear path to help make the lore of giants better in this instance, or to reestablish their previous lousy system. You're just left to, I guess, kind of figure it out. And the PCs, the one who are in charge of whether or not this entire race of beings of many disparate groups and outlooks either can forge their own path or adhere to their old nasty value.
Yeah, it's not great.
I don't dig it. I don't care for it.
It also doesn't do a lot to explain why, how, and...
Well, there is a very concrete explanation of why and how, which is just the ordning directly follows challenge rating.
Right.
Caste system was established by the very, very tall ones with the high strength score and also the highest intelligence score. So not at all eugenicsy.
And the ones who are apparently the least interested in the physical world, who just want to sit and meditate all day, who get together with a mate to make another giant for long enough to get that giant kid to the point where they can go and sit and meditate on their own, and then they're out. So I mentioned earlier that a lot of different cultures in the world have giants in their mythology. Giants as presented in D&D are largely ripped from the pages of Norse myth, which makes total sense. Because a lot of early D&D, not all of it, if you really like D&D, was inspired by Tolkien. And Tolkien basically took Norse myth and beat it to a bloody pulp and turned it into Lord of the Rings. And like to a degree that I don't think a lot of people realize, like if you read The Hobbit and you get to the list of all the names of the dwarves that are in The Hobbit in that group of 13 that starts off, those names are directly lifted from the poetic and prose Eddas, which are the two biggest sources that we have of Norse mythology as written down by Christian Icelandic monks in the 13th century. So their names pulled directly from Norse myth. He was like, yeah, that's why the ogres in the clearing and the Hobbit turned to stone, because that's what happened in Norse myth. All of that. Dragons, all pulled from Norse myth. And British myth too, but like British myth is Norse myth with a coat of paint and the fairy courts on top of it.
Some inspiration from the Celts and then otherwise repeat what the Norse told you.
You have all of this, and from those myths, I can very much understand why you have frost giants and fire giants. Makes total sense. In Norse myth, that the two types of giants. In Norse myth, though, giants and gods were basically analogous. And in Norse myth, the gods are literal expressions of humanity. Like, they are as human or, in terms of their failings, more human than even humans are.
Everything's oversized. Their appetites.
Exactly.
It's very much analogous to the Greek pantheon where they are just shitty.
Yeah, except that the Norse gods are less universally shitty than the Greek gods are.
Yes.
Yay, humanity has progressed. But giants in Norse myth like are somewhat interchangeable with the gods. But they are still secretive and strange and other. They know things that humans and gods don't. Odin, in his quest to find out everything, takes the head of a giant named Mimir and keeps his skull at a well at the base of a root of the world tree and like just asks it questions because the skull knows stuff that he doesn't. But then when you look at giants in D&D, you have an expansion of this system to like stone giants and hill giants and the other giant kin of lesser status. And then you've got, on the other end, you've got cloud giants and storm giants. And you can see where like this idea of taking myth-inspired things and expanding it out because we want bigger enemies to fight. I can't think of any other justification than that. Is they were just like, oh, we need them to be more and better and different. So we're going to make the biggest ones live up in the sky or maybe deep down in the ocean. And they're going to be the tallest ones, the strongest ones are also the smartest, the most avaricious in the form of cloud giants, and also the most contemplative in the form of storm giants. It doesn't fit together. If you like try and pull this out and look at it as a body of lore, it doesn't make any sense.
For what you're saying, Tracy, where like giants of Norse persuasion have their own magics, they have their own knowledge, their own histories, all of this. When you really look at the Monster Manual, and I understand that it's the Monster Manual, the only thing that is presented is fighters. Every single one of them is a big, big, tall fella with a big, big, tall whacking stick. And that's the only action they take. Including how, like, nearly every one of them has the ability to throw a very, very big rock. Mm-hmm. There are always rocks handy whenever you fight a giant. Them's the rules. It's in the stat block.
Large rocks.
And some of them, like, one of them has some casting ability. God, I want to say...
The storm giants and the cloud giants get the ability to cast spells.
Yes, but at the same time, they're minor effects. Like, they're not wizards. They don't have... They're also not... weird magics.
D&D has space for groups of beings of ancient lineage that have fallen from grace and have a mysterious past, and they wish to either reclaim it or forge a new future for themselves. They're called mind flayers or aboleths. Dragons fit that, generally speaking, pretty well. You have any number of options, but because D&D, and specifically meaning the Forgotten Realms, because this is a little bit different in the other official campaign settings, but the Forgotten Realms just takes everything that has been in D&D and says, yes, this can be here, and all of it suffers under the weight of the years of D&D having existed as a property. I have a fix for this. Property that I think I am most widely identified with is a series of games, a number of different games under the banner Iron Edda. And basically it's a take on Norse myth via a Ragnarok that happens because basically Mecha rise up out of the ground, right? And the way that humanity response to this, not what was expected, Ragnarok, is to reach out and form bonds with the spirits of dead giants, which allow them to summon the bones of said giants out of the ground and fight essentially in their own mecha and have a chance at surviving the, you know, the last battle to end all last battles and so on and so forth. The fix for giants for me in D&D is to literally have them be dead. Like, as presented, even if you kept literally everything else, the cased system nonsense, all of it, and you had ogres and other quote-unquote giant kin, ettins and whatever running around, but you had everything bigger than a hill giant as gone, deceased, the remnants of their empires have been swept away, and much like how we position giants in myth in our own history, you look around and go, oh, there's no way that that's a natural formation. It must have been built by giants, but in this case, it probably fucking was.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they were the original children of the gods, if you will, right? Or whatever, however you want to, it doesn't matter how you position it necessarily, because the history itself, much like the Illithids and the Aboleths, is unimportant. What's important is that if you want access to that, if you want to understand where these things came from, if you want to tap into that power, if that's the kind of person you are in this world, you have to treat with the spirits of dead giants who do not necessarily rest easy in their afterlife. Because, again, if you take just a page from what D&D did with the Ording and their god, whose first name I forget, but his title is the Allfather, their empires collapsed because they didn't heed what their god wanted. And so their spirits rest uneasily, and all of them would love a return to that glory. And the only way they're going to get it is by connecting themselves with small mortals and having a chance to exercise any will on the world. So literally taking the bone bonded from a game that I wrote and dropping them into D&D is how I fix this. Yeah. Because it smooths over everything, and it makes giants an interesting thing to engage with rather than.
Oh, it also allows you to reinstall an element of the Ordning in that you've got the elements of giants just become how you interface. There is no such thing as a fire giant. The giants just had magic, and if you happen to tap into the fire stuff, or you need it for forging shit, so you bond and you use it for flame magic, well, that's now a fire giant.
Exactly. And because of the way history and the passage of time works, we always, every culture I think does this, we always superimpose some of our own values upon what we see in the past. Right. And so, like, the cast thing, sure, you can keep almost everything that's written about giants in any D&D property and just make them dead. Like in the Storm King's Thunder, you end up becoming the emissaries of like the Storm Giant Court. And I can't think of a reason why I would make a character that wants to do that. Right. Characters I play, I want them to have like a home base that they're protecting. I want them to have connections with other people. And that's the reason I think the treating with the spirits of dead giants is really interesting, because one of the salient questions in Iron Edda Accelerated is what happens when you, a human, have the spirit of a dead giant who has mortal desires and only the ability to express itself as a set of giant bones. How does that make you fit into your community, right? Like when you're done with battle, great, you've saved your home, you've saved your village, and your dead giant wants to, you know, eat every chicken that exists in your village now as payment for that service rendered, essentially. Like, okay, cool, do you piss off the giant that lives in your head, or do you eat all of the chickens in the village and start a mini famine? And like, those balancing great power with the responsibilities of an individual to their community is a very interesting dynamic.
which resolves the two major complaints I have about giants, which are one, of course, as ever, ecology. If you're going to have a culture, if you're going to have any enclave of giants that is remaining hidden, it's gotta be like 50 individuals at least, because you have to have the ability to just propagate your own society. So that group of people has to fucking eat. And if there are 50 stone giants who are all, what was it, like 18 feet tall? I mean, they're going to eat a little bit.
Yeah, but stone giants don't have to eat cows. Stone giants could eat precious metals.
Don't make excuses for this garbage. You know,
I'm not making excuses for
them. No, no,
it makes perfect sense.
Hey, stop it. You're making excuses for them because Storm King's Thunder exists and does the whole, like, giant feasts and shit. We know for a fact that they eat people food.
They can still have a feast, but on the stone giant side, it's just piled with, you know, emeralds and a bunch of silver, and there's like a little aperitif of platinum. I mean,
we have that. It's called out when they do it. The Zorn do it specifically. They call it out because they know it's fucking weird and interesting. It's not in the book.
Dylan is absolutely right, because if you think about a named giant in our own society historically, namely Andre the Giant. Have you ever read stories about how much that man ate and drank? And he was only, what, 7'2", 7'4", 450 pounds? Can you imagine what an 18-foot-tall individual would have to eat just to maintain caloric neutrality? Like, just so they don't die.
And then you have hill giants who are extra gluttonous on top of that, just consuming as much as they possibly can.
What you have to consider, Aram, is volume goes as the cube of any regular-ass dimension. If you make something twice as big in all dimensions, you know, you're not going to just make a giant that's twice as tall. It's also going to be twice as wide and twice as thick. And that isn't perfect. It's going to be maybe less in the spatial dimension. But it's roughly going to be double in all directions. That means the total volume is going to be 8 times as much.
So you're saying they got big stomachs?
I'm not just saying they have big stomachs. I'm saying the amount you need to eat is, roughly speaking, this is a physicist approximation, biologist, don't fucking bother me. But you need to eat in proportion to the number of cells you have, which is proportional to volume. So if you make something twice as tall, it's going to have to eat 8 times as much.
Okay, on that note, the average American eats a whopping 1,996 pounds, so let's say 2,000 pounds, of food, approximately 1 ton each year. So an equivalent giant would eat 8 tons of food per year. And, and that's the minimum.
That's hill giants, right? That's ogres. That is, you know, the 10 to 12 foot tall ones.
Because a hill giant is 16 feet tall, which is like, roughly speaking, 2.5 times. But when you get out to 4 times, 4 cubed is, I believe, 64 off the top of my head. 128,000 pounds, which is 64 tons.
64 tons, sorry.
128,000 pounds of food.
It's a lot of food.
Picture a pound of ground beef. Now line up 10 of those packages lengthwise, like just side by side. Now line up it another 10 deep and stack that square 10 high. That's 1,000 pounds.
Yeah, that's a pallet of meat.
We need 128 of those.
That's a disgusting amount of cow.
It is. And that's,
there's a lot of cow.
That's a single giant. Now, like I said, if you say that storm giants, like their society has crumbled and there's one enclave of 50 of them, and that's all we got left, that's still, roughly speaking, 5 million pounds of food.
Right, because there is no giant-sized food. There's no giant wheat. There's no giant cows. There's no giant food.
There is giant cows. Like, if you took
aurochs.
There's aurochs, but I even mean just like if you grab, say, the bullet. The bullet, I love bullets. I'm going to keep bringing them up, Rom. Stop shaking your head. You kept bringing up the flump even after I gave you a whole episode about them. The flump is useless and it's garbage.
The flump is personality.
But a bullet, while incredibly dangerous to us, could be livestock to giants, and it is enormous, and that could be a food source.
Again, wait, no, I'm sorry. I got to push back just a little bit here. You cannot have an armored, burrowing creature containable as livestock. You just can't. I don't want to hear any arguments. It doesn't make sense. That is not a replacement cow.
If stone giants can eat platinum, then they can make gemstone enclosures underground that bullets cannot pass through.
Why would all they make their food? It's okay.
All of this is moot anyway, because these fuckers are dead.
Yes.
And this is why, this is part of why they're dead. This is not sustainable.
Outside of having like some super powerful magic society, if that collapses, giants can't work.
See, this is one of my favorite little bits of the way I would run it, is I agree, make them all dead. Like, I would maybe leave some storm giants in place, just because those are the sort of, like, they've been sitting around contemplating, and you give them the sort of monk, they eventually become immortal sort of thing. There's, like, three dudes
they're who have ascended,
and they actually are basically full-blown gods. When you finally reveal that the reason the giants and the dragons were at war was because you can't have two things that big that both want to eat meat.
Right.
That's it. They were hungry.
War is that simple.
Like, the entire thing, all your historical documents are going to allude to how it was a power struggle, how they were fighting over control. And you're right, it was control over resources. That resource was pork.
Food. That's it.
Each of them wanted to be able to go to Damon's over the weekend and get a slab of ribs, and only one, there's not room at the table for both of you.
Yeah. So we got to kill all the dragons.
Exactly. You might listen to this and you might say, okay, well, it's a magical fantasy world. It's really boring if the reason that giants didn't survive is because they couldn't eat. There wasn't enough food for them to survive. And my response to that is, okay, they're more interesting now dead in this scenario with like this history left behind than they were if you were trying to have them just run in D&D as they are now. Because here's the thing about a boring question or a boring answer like, oh, there wasn't enough food. You're not going to stop thinking about it. Right? You're going to be playing your regular bog standard game of D&D. You're going to get to a hill giant setting. And these gluttonous hill giants are a problem. They've been raiding the local livestock. Well, sure, they've been fucking raiding the local livestock. And you're going to be thinking about that livestock. And you're going to be like, well, how many giants were there in the village? And Dylan said something about cubing and they would have to eat. And like,
you're missing 27 cows. That points towards, yeah. Because Sherlock Holmes,
it
that
breaks
shit.
Your suspension of disbelief. Yeah. Exactly. And if your suspension of disbelief as a player is broken that easily, then the thing you are attempting to believe probably doesn't merit holding on to.
You have to do something. Even if you want to take a smaller step and say there were giant kingdoms, they pissed off the wrong god or whatever, they all vanished and only the wanderers survived because they weren't home, right? You, even if it's something like that, but you have to, like, you literally cannot have a big, huge existing giant society, a big, huge existing dragon society, and then add the ancient societies of the elves and the dwarves and whatever, and just keep piling. You can't pile that all on top of each other.
And this is something that always comes back to me. And this is something that was heavily influenced by the fact that when I was a high school student, I had the best English teacher I had in my tenure there hand me Terry Pratchett. And the thing about Terry Pratchett that he teaches in his books is they all run on something he refers to as narrative causality. It isn't important if it actually works. It's important if it makes sense. And you can tell me it's magical fantasy. It doesn't have to work. You're right. It doesn't have to work. You don't have to have a situation where you can actually line up the food chain and be like, this is why it's real. But you do have to accept if that's just a really tall guy, he has to eat a fuckload because that is just how the world works. That's not science. That's intuition. And that's the only bit you can ever hold on to when you invoke magic. It's part of why I hate your answer about them just eating metals, because you know why metals are valuable? Why minerals are valuable? Because they're fucking rare. if you have a guy that's 35 feet tall and eats diamonds, how many diamonds still exist?
Well, he can't just look. They're going to have to be metal. You know, they're going to have to be, you know, not very selective. Like iron's good, but gold's a little tastier. Like, you know, they get.
Yeah, it's but I'm saying things, like you're going like to food. You're going to drive into.
Why do you think diamonds are rare?
Right.
Which, that's again, plays no, into wonderful things about like the world is now like, why are diamonds rare? They're a component in all of these spells. Like, we were at a point where we were experimenting with magic and we found out that these were what facilitated magic. We must have had a bunch of them. We did. We don't. We still have any because the giants died and stopped eating them.
And if there are any left, though, like, you have to be real careful about opening a mine. Like, you'd have to really keep on your guard because it's basically just a buffet.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that when we talk about the Zorn proper, the monster for which this is true. Because, again, this is something that comes up in the same sort of idea as niche protection. If you're going to give me a bullshit answer to something in the monster manual, you better not say something that was interesting enough for them to write it down for another monster. Because if it was interesting enough to be the basis for an entire weirdly numbered, armed, oddly placed eyeball monster somewhere else in the book, it would have been interesting enough to write it down under the stone giant entry. They didn't, so it's not true.
And they gave it to the gold dragon as well. So if they meant it, they would have put it there. Sure.
And Aram, you hearkened to something else that would also be interesting as either an alternative or an addition to my proposed solution is like lone wandering giants. Super intriguing. If you are at some roadside tavern and it's a stormy night and lightning flashes and you see like this shape moving in the distance that is impossibly tall, backlit by the lightning, and the tavern shakes just ever so slightly with the footfalls. If you give me Shadow of the Colossus style giants, even Skyrim type giants, which is what Skyrim is what inspired Ironetta to begin with. So like giants there, it's a couple of them and they're not so tall, game engine limits being what they are, fine, whatever, but they've got mammoths, they make cheese from the mammoths, and to Dylan's point, the internal coherency is there. You can glance at this big bonfire with two giants, two mammoths, and some stinky mammoth cheese and a bunch of treasure they've taken from hapless fools that have wandered by, and you go, yes, this makes sense. I will not fuck with these giants, because if I do, they will hit their club once and I will go flying through the air with ragdoll physics, you know. And yeah, I'm gone. I'm done. So like that's cool too, and that can fit alongside the giants are dead thing, because like, wow, if there's a living one, how does it survive? That can be mysterious. How one single giant survives, I don't fucking care what it eats. Like it's an enigma walking across the landscape. A society of them doesn't hold up. Multiple caste-driven societies of them. Doubly doesn't hold up in the face of all the other sprawling empires of humanoids that exist across the landscape of Faerun. I don't buy it, and I don't want to. There are other big, weird, enigmatic races. Let me do something different with giants.
And if you do end up in like the giant graveyard, and your party finds loot, like have it be like not like 200 gold, have it be one giant coin. That's worth 200 gold. Now you got to get this, yeah, you know, sewer exactly. Lid back home.
That's always nice. You get giant art would obviously be incredibly valuable to collectors. And again, weird magic, because this is something that comes up over and over again. Every bit of magic is just they can cast these spells X times a day. I'm aware that in Monsters, Mordenkainen, in other words, starts with an M, I don't really give a shit, whichever book that was, they reworked the stat blocks and they gave them special abilities. So you no longer have somebody who just casts Sacred Flame, look up what Sacred Flame does. That's a major improvement. But if you're going to tell me that something has its own weird mystical traditions, when I find a magic item in a giant horde, give me something weird. Make it do something. Don't tell me it does a spell effect. Tell me that it interacts with something other than the weave. Tell me it interacts with the weave, but the way it does is almost like, you know, our magic works on like a resonance sort of feel. You know, you're causing the threads to vibrate. It's music. It's why bards can operate. Giant magic works on special relativity. It's gravity. It's putting weight and letting the fabrics warp around the object you've placed. So now you have this massive rune and it does weird shit in a large area and changes how magic behaves.
Or if you find something that seems to be sized for you, you should really question what it was originally. Like if you have this finely crafted stone walking stick that when you jiggle it just right, it seems to like pull other organic material towards the tip. Motherfucker, that's a toothpick.
That's really good. I really like that, Tracy.
A stone giant's toothpick that they magic to pull, you know, bits of ambrosia out of their teeth. And now you're using it to like launch a goblin across the battlefield because you activated it, it flies towards it, and then you fling it and deactivate it and let physics take over.
I would also, for the record, give that like treat it as a rapier and let it deal extra force damage because when you stab with it, it is pulling the person you stabbed towards the blade.
You could just find like a big ornate silver shield that you find out later blocks magic missiles because it's a brooch of shielding. It's a little pin a giant would have worn, but it's large enough for you to use as a full-size shield.
Tracy, we have fully and thoroughly covered question three, but I do have to ask question two anyway. Are giants monsters?
The quick answer is no, but, which is the case with a lot of monsters with this show. That's the way it tends to go. For the purposes of answering this question, I'm going to imagine giants as they were in the past, regardless of whether you're implementing my solution or you are asking about food resources or you're just looking at what's in the monster manual. They were something else before, right? They were something more than what is presented in the literature we have in front of us. And from that perspective, I'm going to say no, they're not monsters. They're literally big people. They are ascribed all the same motivations, passions, desires, failings, flaws that humans who top out at 7 feet are ascribed. So the actual answer is, like with most things, the context within which you are encountering this giant is super important as to whether or not it is monstrous to you. As a game designer, like, context is the thing that is the most significant to me, because without a shared context, without a shared understanding of any given thing in the world, you don't have the ability to have a conversation with someone where there's shared understanding just between you two. Context is extremely important. So I'm generally just going to say no, giants aren't monsters. If treated in the right way, they can be monstrous in the same way that a human protagonist or antagonist, in this case, can be monstrous. And I think handling them that way, treating them really like big humans, for real, probably does them more justice than anything that's printed in the Monster Manual.
Aram, what's going on? Why is all of our stuff in boxes?
Good news, Dylan! Dead Ghost Productions is moving.
What do you mean, moving?
We're separating our patrons and launching a new Dead Ghost page to provide our listeners with more content and a clean RSS feed for all their podcasts. Stacy is helping us out with the heavy stuff.
She's a bit clumsy.
Okay. So that makes sense, sort of. What about the people who have already subscribed?
I've got it handled.
everyone who is currently subscribed to our Dead Ghost Productions level or our combined feeds level will get a free month once we split the feeds on June 1st. If you're signed up for a yearly subscription, you'll get just as many free months on our new Dead Ghost feed as you currently have left on that subscription.
Okay, so what do people have to do in order to make the switch?
It's easy. Everyone will get a link to activate their free subscription sent directly to their email. They just need to follow that link to the new Dead Ghost patron and they'll be all set. The changes won't start until June 1st, and if anyone has questions about it, they can email us at killeverymonster@gmail.com or deadghostproductions@gmail.com. They can also message us directly in Patreon.
Okay. This better not interfere with my experiments, Vardian.
Don't worry, Dylan. I've told Stacy to stay clear of your laboratory. How do we safely power down the nuclear generator again?
Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
Aram, we're starting with you today. Tell me who you're bringing into this mess.
So, I am bringing Jack. Jack the Giant Seeker. Jack is a goblin. You. Jack is a goblin who was small for goblins and was picked on relentlessly by the other goblins, which is why he's got the name Jack, because it was given to him, just like everything else was, kind of meanness. And look, Jack will be the first person to say, not all goblins are mean, but these goblins were dickbags.
Mm-hmm.
And so eventually he was like, you know what? I'll show them. I'll go get the most, biggest, mightiest power I can get. I will go get the power of the giants. And they all were like, oh, sure you will. And they all laughed at him, but he set off and he has been on a walk for the past 3 months, making his way to where he believes, where the rumors have said, where the elders have whispered stories to him that he can bond with a giant.
Okay, so first things first, you can let me know if we need to pause the recording. If you have that bag of magic beans, fucking change the magic item right now.
I do not have the bag of magic beans.
Cool.
Why would you think I lingered over that for several minutes? No, but what he does have, okay, he has, so picture this little scrawny goblin, okay?
Picturing
so he's
it.
Even smaller than most goblins yes. should be, and he's wearing a cloak of the Raven. Okay. On a normal human, right?
Yep.
All the feathers would fall and align. It would be this graceful, you know, kind of like almost winter-esque a cloak. That's the feeling you would get from a distance. With a goblin, the feathers just don't fall right. They're just, he's just too small. They're too large in comparison. So they all stick out like a bush.
You look like a soft porcupine.
I look like if a crow could be scared like a cat. That's what I look like.
That's pretty good. I like that.
He has a crossbow, and he also has like a dagger that he has tied to his arm with the blade just past his hand.
Okay. So I want you to give me a history roll.
Okay. I have a -1.
Yep.
That is going to be a 4. -1 is 3.
I, by the dint of what we're doing, have to send you to the right place. I would be tempted, if this were a D&D game, to actually send you in a completely wrong direction and give you like an encounter that I just thought was fun and wanted to run, and just do something entirely separate than your actual goal and have you pointed in the right direction by the end of
it. That'd be great.
That's not legal right now.
Right.
So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to lie to you. Stone giants are obviously made of meat because they're people. They're just real big. So what you know is that stone giants lived underground and then they got buried. But kind of like if you have something lighter than water and you put it in the ocean, over time it rises. So you know you have to go to the top of the mountain and the body of the stone giant buried in the stone is going to slowly work its way up through the ground and you'll find it surfacing up on the edges of the cliff.
Hmm. Yes. Like they're like a seed and they grow towards the sun because stone giants need sun. The reason why they don't exist anymore is it was very cloudy for a long period of time.
Yeah, because the stone giants get the sun and then they you know, grow up real big and they become cloud giants. They float into the sky and they block the sun. And you have to,
that's right.
It's the circle of life and also the water cycle.
Just like if you leave a rock out in the sun too long, it'll float away.
Yeah, that's true.
That's science.
That's science. So you have come up like too high. Your strategy for this was to climb a mountain to like the top bit and just look down and see where the cliffs were.
Right.
And what you were looking for is the rough shape of a person slowly emerging from the stone.
Or like maybe a hand or some other kind of
sign.
Just
a vague shape of a dude popping out of rocks.
Right.
And what you notice, this is actually a relatively intelligent observation, is that there is an oddity in the coloration of the trees. You pursued this. This is past information. Came down, and when you're walking through, you can see that basically roughly in the shape of a very, very tall body, the trees are growing smaller and a little bit more packed together, as if they're fighting over nutrients in the ground and growing well enough that they're all kind of meshing together rather than any single tree just growing big.
Ah, that's a clear sign of giants emerging.
Yeah.
Because they suck up all the nutrients.
Yeah.
They starve the trees. That's how they would kill elves.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
It's important to note that goblin librarians don't exist.
No, we don't like books.
No.
No.
So you...
We share all of our knowledge via songs.
Yes.
Because a song sticks with you.
And the trouble is, songs have to rhyme.
Right.
Which means sometimes...
That does make it hard.
You have to lie just to make the song work. Otherwise, you can't teach people anything. And it's better to teach people something that's 90% true and rhymes than it is to not teach them at all.
Right. If they forget half of the stuff they read, but they remember 70% of the stuff that's 90% true,
that's a net higher rate of retention.
Yes.
Yeah, that's 63% retention versus 50. That's better.
Yeah.
That's math.
That's science.
So you come through this territory and basically the forest is sort of breaking onto this cliffside, probably a 20, 30 foot, depending on where you're standing, little clearing where the grass is trying to grow out, but like you're now past where the trees and the material has dropped. There's not enough dirt for anything to really take. It is stony near the edge. And you can see just the edges, the rough shape, the outline of shoulders and a head. You can also see another figure. Tracy, would you like to tell me about this individual?
The person that you see at a glance, smaller than the shoulders and head indicated. Bigger than you, for sure.
Most things are.
Not hard to do. Not hard to do, but still.
Some cats.
Yeah.
The person is seems to be like kneeling next to the shoulders and head, and as you're either standing or approaching, their hands are sort of like stretched out in front of them, and you can't see what their hands are on, but they're below the shoulders and head, and then you see them sort of retract their arms, and they kind of like stretch back their shoulders, like their head had been bowed, and they're moving like they hadn't moved in a while, very, very stiffly. And they go to stand up, and as they do, they're moving kind of slowly and a little unsteadily. One hand is out on the sort of the platform in front of them. As they stand up and they turn around, and you see a human of rather androgynous mien, longer hair, they're wearing leather armor, a sword strapped to their back. They look like people from like the villages around where you have been. Like the dress is not unfamiliar to you.
Sure.
But to be this far out, like you've been walking for a while, and for someone to sort of be from the same area might strike you as a little odd. When they stand and turn, you catch a glimpse of their face in, we'll say, the fading sunlight. Let's just say the sun's heading down behind the cliffs. You can see that they look a little bit drawn, like their skin is really tight to their skull. They look hungry. It's hard to describe them any other way. And they just sort of stand and turn with their backs to the shape that you had seen. And it just kind of looks like they're looking out over the area that you're walking through. There's no movement or reaction that they have seen you or anything like that. And they just stand there, unmoving, after they've stood and turned around.
Right, but it does feel like they've seen me.
No, not at all. You get no impression of that. In fact, like, If you were to look at them up close, like it's very much a 1,000-yard stare. Like you would not be sure that they're actually mentally present, even though they are physically there.
Okay. Well, I'm realizing that Jack does not know what to expect. Just knows that there be giants here in some form. So I think Jack...
Do you want to give me an Arcana roll?
Sure. -1.
Yep.
We'd love to see it.
That is an 18 minus 1 is 17.
So you're familiar, roughly, with the ritual you're looking to conduct?
Right.
Involves a good deal of meditation. And the phrase you read was obviously not from goblins, because then you would have heard the phrase in a song and it would have rhymed with something. The phrase you read was, you have to touch the heart of the giant. Now you assume, based on context, that this is not directly literal. So you kind of have a rough feel for what you're looking to do, to somehow, through meditation and ritual, reaching out to the heart of the giant and drawing its consciousness into you.
Right. However, there's a thing now.
There's a dude here.
And this dude is, like, bigger than me, but not a giant.
Not a giant. probably just a little over six. They look muscled, like they know how to use the sword on right. their back, but like just a relatively average looking person.
Okay.
Save for much thinner than you might expect. Like as you're watching and as the wind is blowing and like blowing their hair back, you can see like the veins and cords in their neck. Like everything looks a little bit shrunken in, but they're not standing weakly, right? They're standing almost like the impression that you get is that they're like rooted to the ground. Like you would expect that if a strong wind came by, they wouldn't move, their hair would blow, but they wouldn't move at all. Like they seem very, very stable.
You're seeing a weight that would imply a stiff breeze would carry them,
right.
but a posture yeah. that implies a tall bear would be hard-pressed to move them.
Goblins are a cautious lot, especially when around anything larger than they are, so mm-hmm. I cast Long Strider upon myself. I get to within 60 feet, climb up on top of a rock, clear my throat. Hello, giant guardian.
And what language are you speaking?
I do speak in giant. So he will speak in very, yeah, not good giant.
Accented
right?
Accented giant.
Yeah.
He knows a few phrases. And so this is one of the ones he's memorized.
You're about 60 feet away, which is like, that's a decent clip
in a
windy yeah. sort of cliffside area.
Yeah.
So for a moment, you think that maybe like the wind might have, like even the sound of the wind might have made your words impossible to hear. And then just when you're about to like speak again, the head and just the head moves and turns to look toward you. And you make eye contact with this.
Hello.
Greetings. I didn't see you approach.
I'm gonna put something on this. Aram?
Yes.
Roll me another history.
All right. It's negative one still.
Yep. I'm going to give you advantage.
Okay, good, because the first roll was a 2.
Cool.
The second roll is a 14 minus 1 is 13.
This speech is also in giant.
Hmm.
It is also heavily accented.
Hmm.
However, that accenting is... Giant as a language has been carried on by species like ogres and trolls. This is not one of those dialects. This is archaic.
Interesting. Like arcane as a language? Like
no,
magic as a language?
No, not archaic.
Oh.
As in like you're expecting
as in
someone
old.
Yeah.
Like
thank
just
you.
For a bad analogy, like you're waiting for someone to speak French and Latin comes out of their mouth.
Sure. Yeah. I got you.
And,
okay.
And if I can layer on top of that, you hear their voice and it almost, I mean, you're a ways away, right? So
yeah.
It almost sounds like there might be two people speaking. You kind of feel a rumble, vague, vibrational in the area. If you were to like pick it apart, the archaic part comes from the deep tones that you're hearing.
If you protect old giant, I arrive to have relations.
Tracy, I'm going to tell you how that hits your ear, because it does hit you two different ways. This is actually accurate to the second mind.
Yes.
Because the verb for to have relations used mm-hmm. to just mean to interact with. And it is modern dialects that have taken that to mean to fuck.
So the person who you have only seen like move stiffly and like almost as if they're unused to their own body looks at you. A smile breaks across their face and you just But the laughter that you hear is only the first tone. It's not the deep rumbling.
Can you not move?
The person finishes laughing and says, "May," and the two tones are reestablished.
Are you unable to progress?
May I come closer, or you may come closer. We can talk. I mean you no harm.
The verb progress specifically refers to tasks and does not mean to come forward.
Hey, let's make it right.
It's not right in this context, but if you speak goblin, you can see how that translation would happen.
I do speak goblin, and so I'm like, oh no, that totally, yeah.
No, I can move forward.
The person moves stiffly, like their joints not ache, but like they haven't used them in a while.
Well, it's only right that I meet them halfway. Then I will jump down from my rock and I will stride out over.
There's a log that's fallen, and as they approach, as they get closer to the log, they stumble over a little clot of dirt and like catch themselves on the log. And
I think I should wait here. Would you care to join me?
Yes, and I will stride over to the log. I will like get up on it on my end and walk across to them, so I'm a little bit higher, a little bit closer to eye height.
Greetings.
My name is Garrig. What is yours? And you notice that Garrig has switched to speaking goblin. And it's just a single tone. Again, that deep rumbling is gone. It might have just been, maybe it was the sound of the giant rising up out of the ground that you were hearing.
Oh.
You know, as it's trying to get to the sun. Who knows?
Oh, so you speak the tongue of my people. Wonderful.
I do speak the tongue of your people. Your name?
Oh, my name is Jack. Well, that's a name I was given. I guess most names are given, though. Okay. All names are given. This one that was given to me is Jack.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Jack. We're quite a ways away from anything. What brings you out here?
Ah, well. And he would, you know, just basically launch into his whole story.
I'm just as a production note, Aram, it really would be more appropriate if you sang all of that.
My name is Jack. I didn't like the smacks, so I ran away from bullies and said I'd be right back. I wanted to be strong, a desire to belong. I knew if I found giants, then my friends would be a throng. I searched high and low, I traveled to and fro. I came across a mountain and thought that is where they'd go. I climbed for many days, the wind it did not faze. If I was to be giant, then I had to learn their ways. I finally reached the top of this log I chose to flop, but then I heard a rumble and out of the hill you popped. You moved really slow, your voice was really low. You're only 6 feet tall, but I bet you've got yet to grow. You walked over and said hi, you seemed a little shy, but now we know each other and my questing goal is nigh. And that brings us to right now.
Jack the Giant. So you seek to bond with a giant?
Absolutely.
I have news that is good, and I have a word that I fear you may not enjoy hearing.
Good news first.
Good news first. Well, if you look back where I was kneeling, you can see, and now that we're a little bit closer, you can see sort of in the fading sunlight, there is like, your eyes begin to be able to pick it out. This quality of light apparently is very good for showing this off. You can see an intricately carved set of progression leading up to this sarcophagus. And the head and arms that you see are that of a deceased giant. As you can see, this is the resting place of a giant. The word I fear you will not be pleased by is that I just completed forming a bond with this giant.
Ah, oh, damn my tiny legs. Well, also, like, I imagine on the way up, I'm just so tiny, I was like blown off the cliff a few times. Had to glide back with my cloak of the raven.
You had a huge ass cloak. It really became.
It was both a hindrance and my savior every single time.
The only reason you didn't smush, but at the same time, it's the reason you were at risk.
I was just a kite for the past 2 hours.
Ah, well, all right. Well, hang on. What's it like?
Oh. And that thousand-yard stare comes back, and the second voice, and without even realizing it, Garrick has switched back to speaking giant.
It is unlike anything I have ever experienced. My body, my senses, my will is my own, but it's overlaid. When I look at this clearing, I do not see the trees and the scrub and the small things that have grown over hundreds of years. I see the work that we put in. I see the carvings that we made with our own hand. I see the resting place that we made for ourselves so that we could experience the dreaming.
And then there's a moment, and Garrick sort of snaps back to themselves more fully. I think that is why the giant agreed to the bond. How much do you know of what the stone giants were?
So as he was zoning out, like, Jack's hand lingered to his crossbow, like, kind of fingered the hilt just a bit, and then was like,
I can't just kill them. So what I know about stone giants is that they were big and had to eat a lot of gold, a whole bunch of gold, and sometimes diamonds. And if they were having babies, they had to eat diamonds because they had negative extra energy. So they needed, like, I think it was, if you had to, you take a baby that was a stone giant, you'd weigh it, and then you'd have to weigh it equal amounts of diamonds. And then the mother would eat all the diamonds all at once, and then they became a baby.
So the trouble with relaying all of your information through song is that entertainment takes the same format as education. So there are some songs, like an average 90% accurate, because there's a lot of important educational songs. But also there are several that are like 2% true.
Mm-hmm. And as you're saying this, I'm assuming you're singing this in Goblin.
Yes.
Right. So like,
it doesn't really translate well.
Well, you can see behind Garrick's eyes is that sort of like, their eyes are like darting back and forth, like they're thinking about something, almost as if they're looking up as if they're trying to decide how to say something, but it's all internal. And behind the scenes, Garrick is translating the goblin into giant for whoever their host.
Perhaps
to.
Even doing a little bit extra work to try and make the translation sound
to
good.
Smooth it out a little bit. And as that finishes, you get the sense of laughter again, but it's the ground rumbling this time. As the giant thinks that may have been the fucking funniest thing they have ever heard. Well, it's the only thing they've heard recently. Therefore, it is the funniest thing they've heard in a long, long time.
That is not quite accurate, although we can see how stories may have been distorted over the years.
I also hear that during the mating ritual, one of the two will spend many years bringing many sands together, many dyes, many different leads and metals to make beautiful, beautiful little baskets of inlaid glass and lead forms that catch the light of the first suns that rise on the mountains when they present their child to the dawn.
That?
As Garrick pauses there's the translation, and there's any rumbling stills, and it is quiet in the clearing. And Garrick turns and looks at you and says,
"That is completely accurate. Shockingly, completely accurate."
They take a deep breath and say that stone giants sequestered themselves. They worked on their craft, and they largely believed that the surface world was a dream. And this person gestures to the sarcophagus, wanted to be as close to that dream as possible after their life was over. And now, I don't know if what they're experiencing is more of a dream than it was before or not, but I do know that that is why they accepted my offer and why they are bound here now. Apologies, I have neither eaten nor spoken nor drank anything in a number of days. Would you mind if I grabbed my bag too?
Oh, wait, hang on. I got you covered. And he just like whips open his big poofy cloak, and he's got like two hairs hanging on inside latches there. It's like, hey, no, I did some hunting before I came. Goblins are always prepared. And he sets about going and stripping this thing, you know, spark it up a little fire, puts a little wood stick through it. He's having like casual conversation the full time. So where are you from before being here?
And this whole time that you're cooking, you're getting like one word answers, and an observant party would notice that Garrick is growing increasingly more distant as the smells of reasonably well tended to cooking are happening, because the clearing is getting more and more and more still because the giant hasn't smelled food in thousands of years. All of these sensory experiences are new for the giant, and the only way that the giant can get even an approximation of them is for Garrick to experience them at a giant scale. So Garrick is not speaking much because they're continually taking in big, deep breaths to smell the rabbit cooking.
Do I pick up on that at all?
Roll me a perception.
Now that I'm decent at. Nice. That is going to be a 14 plus 7 is 21.
Oh, then for my part, you clock everything that's happening.
Right.
You may not know why, but you right. see what's like. It's all sensory stuff. It's all smells and sights. And at one point in time, without even realizing it, like Garrick's left arm sort of reaches over and plucks a plant and just begins to absently shred the leaves. And looks at the fire so intently, the rabbits roasting over it, and waits and waits and waits, and then sprinkles the leaves over the top. And as they hit and go up in the flames that are surrounding this, like this beautiful smell emanates. And it's like, it smells like cooking from home. It smells like something that you don't get out here in the wild.
And it's all big. Everything is large.
All of the smells, the gestures are much, much larger.
All right, he's going to take that into account, and his assumption is that he needs to add more spices because they need bigger flavors. So he will, like, they'll just pile the herbs up on this thing, almost like a crust over the rabbit.
And as the juices are just beginning to slow down, without take any actions that you want in reaction to this, but Garrick reaches out and grabs the skewers, and still hot from the fire, unflinchingly begins to grab the meat off and just shove it into their mouth.
Oh, it's going to be super hot.
Their fingers are burning, and they're saying nothing.
Okay.
Their mouth, their lips are beginning to blister, and they're not, they're just jamming the meat into their mouth.
Oh, dear. Cure wounds.
You actually cast Cure Wounds on him?
It's a little freaked out. He's like, oh, dear, hang on, wait. Oh, you probably, you know what? You probably didn't expect it was going to be that hot. Let me just get that for you. Cure Wounds.
I'm going to say that, Realm, I want you to make a dex save. Because I think one of the free skewers just goes for your hand.
That is going to be a 14 plus 8 is 22.
Yes, so Garrick is very much aware that in the wars that led to the fall of the giants, one of the major forces, the dragons were the primary antagonist. Something that doesn't get written about as much is the role the gods played. And the role that humanoid magics played in presenting the dragons with an opportunity. And while Garrick, when fully in his faculties, will probably be able to explain, like, no, like, it's good, that was a fine spell. For a giant, noticing divine spell casting, not a pleasant memory.
Yeah. So I think the hand comes up and stabs at your hand with a skewer, and you just evade it, no problem, and I think the spell goes off and cures the blisters and the burned fingers, and all of that pain is eased.
He has an ability where if he's missed or if he's hit by a creature larger than him, he can instantly retaliate. So as that spike came down, he instinctually, like, again, the hand went back to the crossbow, but you know, he's not smart, but he's wise, and he held his shit and just kind of was like, oh, I guess, listen, you seem really hungry. Why don't you have mine?
And when you say that, Garrick's hands drop this. There's bones on the carcass. There's nothing left. It's been picked completely clean. Stops and like looks at their hands and sees just like the grease and everything all over them, and has a slightly wild look in their eyes when they look at you, like, I don't know what just happened, and I hurt for a second and now I don't, and I was hungry and now I'm not, and then another big deep inhale, but this seems more meditative in nature.
You know what, in fact, like, There are times when, like, I would react with, like, a lot of animals out in the wild, right? And like, it would be intense moments where you can't necessarily communicate with these beings, but I can, like, kind of sync up with their breathing. I can look them in the eye. So I'm just, like, no words, just this quiet exchange of, like, both of us breathing.
And after a few exchanges like that, Garrick seems to come back to themselves and says, I apologize. It is a unique experience sharing a body with someone else. And like the voice doubling, like, increases as that phrase continues, to the point that the clearing is like vibrating a little bit with the rumbling of the second voice. I had anticipated having time to acclimate myself without speaking to anyone else, and yet here we are. I don't... What you seek is not here. The bond you seek is mine.
Yes, but I have still found a giant, and I'm here for a reason. And now I think I know why. You need help. Very clearly. You need someone to help you out. Because I think, no offense, my friend, you might be in a little over your head. And experience,
I'm very used to. I am here to make sure you make it. I am your giant's friend. Well, I am the friend of the giant. I'm like the giant lieutenant.
Garrick looks at you and a greenish light replaces the reflection of the fire in their eyes. And that light spreads sort of vaguely like ghost fire like across their whole body. And they begin to rise up in the air. And as they do, you see the bones of the giant behind them begin to light up with the same color and move towards them. And as the bones approach, they rise up until they're sort of neatly resting inside the giant's rib cage. Bits of the collarbone and like the spinal column are missing so that their head rests just below the giant's skull, because stone giants aren't huge. But still, no, they're kind
like
of
Ripley
floating
in that
there.
Little loader machine, right?
Yeah. That's exactly what it's like. Because as they move, so moves the giant. And a big bony hand comes down. And this hand is like the size of three dinner plates together.
Sure.
And the invitation is obvious for you to step onto the bony palm.
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely he will. This is great.
You step up and the hand raises until you're about eye level with not Garrick's face floating above the ribcage, but the giant's face.
A friend to the giants, you say? Well, you've proven yourself true thus far. Let us see where the journey takes us.
Hop on his shoulder.
And the giant begins walking as the sun sets behind the cliffs.
So listen, let me tell you about Quail.
Thank you for joining us for Giants.
If any of the ideas we've discussed on the show have sparked some of your own, tell us about it on Twitter at KEM Podcast. You'll find me at DJ Malenfant and Aram at Aram Vardian.
For ad-free episodes, early releases, bonus episodes, print-ready maps, our new audio DMs notes, and my character sheets for each encounter, head over to patreon.com/deadghostpro.
Our intro theme and many of the sound effects you hear in the show were created by BattleBards. Check them out at battlebards.com.
This episode was produced by Aram Vartian and Dylan Malenfant. I also did the editing. We were joined by Tracy Barnett. You can find them on Blue Sky at The Other Tracy. And if you are anything like me and all of that information just fell right out of your head, you'll find everything you need at killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time for Kill Every Monster.